Hello, this is Joan.
Hi, Joan. This is Audrey from WTJU.
Hello, Audrey. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm just stepping outside so I can get better reception.
All righty. Good plan. So I just have a couple questions. Is now still a good time to do the interview? Awesome.
Absolutely.
Good deal. So it's my understanding that you were the treasurer from 1975 to 79 and that you ran the Sunday morning show during those years. What led you to WTJU in the first place?
Well, in the fall of my freshman year, they had a, not festival, but, you know, I think it was a men's gym or something where all the groups came and places to volunteer and stuff and get involved in the university. And I went, and I wanted to work in television as a career, which I did, and I am. But the TV people, I don't know, seemed a little bit inaccessible. Like, everybody wanted to be there, and it was just a little bit too crowded. And so I went over to the radio station, and they seemed really friendly.
That's cool.
As I'm sure they still are. And much more accessible. It was much easier to get involved in the radio station, so that's where I landed.
Nice. What was it like being the treasurer during that time?
Well, I don't know what it's like today, but we had to do a budget, and then we had to go before the committee, and I'm trying to, student council or whatever?
Yeah,
and you had to go before them and do a presentation and ask and beg for money. And do they do that now?
Each year
you have to.
Yep, something like that.
Okay. And I forget what our budget was at the time, but we used to get free albums from a record store down on the mall. And don't recall the name of that store, but we got, I don't know, hundreds of records. And that was our source of music. I mean, we didn't have anything, any other albums was it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing that was never included in our budget because they were free. It was just our music director, this guy, John Clem, would go down and he'd pick out stuff. And I don't know what his deal was, 10 a week or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I included that in the budget, which upped our kind of overall budget really high. And so they really questioned that when they looked at it and they said, you know, well, you got to go get money from, you know, you got all this money here coming in. Why should we be giving you more money? So I had to really justify the whole squeaky chairs and, you know, all the other stuff, the equipment stuff that we needed to buy. And I had to justify the radio station was important to the university.
Yeah. So how did you go about justifying that? Was that like a proposal or what were your sources and your arguments per se?
That it was an opportunity for students to learn radio broadcasting, and it was completely non-commercial. And at that time, it was the beginning of students kind of reaching out to the other Charlottesville stations, and they were coming on pretty strong. And I remember coming back, I think it was second, maybe third year, and it was the first time they had eliminated at the local radio stations, they had eliminated the DJ, and they were just recording him and then just playing this canned music.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't compete with that. So we had to find ways to get our listeners to be loyal to us for other reasons. We didn't have the resources to do that, to have as much music as they had and contests and all that stuff, you know.
Right. Man. Was there any underwriting during that time, or was it all based off of proposals? And
no, that was the underwriting. Was
okay.
Very loose connection of this album store that John Clem would go down and pick up albums, and nobody had ever accounted for that in our budget, or there was just no formalization of that.
Yeah.
He just had a friendship with the guy, I guess, and did that for years. And so I was the one that sort of said, well, we need to put this in our budget and show that we are reaching out to the community and getting money from people and that we're not just coming to you and begging for everything.
Indeed.
So interesting. You know, nobody had ever what's called underwriting or anything. It was just That's how we got our music, because we couldn't afford with our budget. I think it was around $10,000.
Wow.
Something like that. I don't know. Do you know what your budget is now?
Oh, I'm not sure. I know it's pretty sizable, though, but I'm not sure how much it's grown.
Right.
But,
yeah. Right. I said in one of my emails, the big concern that I remember was the squeaky chairs. And I don't know if that continues to be a source of painful noise, but, you know, people always complained about the chairs making noise, of course, on the microphone.
Right.
And, you know, they'd always want to buy us new chairs. Like, you know, we want to spend money on new chairs. Like, God, we just bought new chairs last year.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sitting pretty still today.
Yeah, there you go. That being a treasurer was really my main, really my main job.
Yeah.
But I did have a show that nobody else wanted.
Nice. What was your show about? What was on it?
Oh, it was just making sure I got there and turned on the transmitter. You know, 6 o'clock on Sunday morning wasn't exactly a popular time for people to be tuning in. And when you're the first, when you're sign on, nobody's got the radio on, right?
Right.
Because there's nothing. There's literally nothing on. And there was a morning jazz. God, what was that guy? Sleeper was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a morning jazz show from 9 to noon, which was very popular.
Yeah.
So basically, I got the station running and on for that. But I play just anything. I mean, yeah, anything. Joni Mitchell. As I say, just we were all albums. And I actually wasn't all that educated on music because I was in the engineering school and mm-hmm. I just kind of knew what I knew. So I would just kind of go through and I would take requests and I'd pull out stuff. And okay, this was a nice looking album cover. Let's see what song this. It was really catch as catch can, whatever.
Right.
And the whole studio was completely lined in albums.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to be very careful in that with our library. You know, that was everything, was just making sure that it was all categorized and put back correctly. And, of course, needle skipping, you know, purchasing
right.
needles and bad albums. It was always a huge issue. Warped albums. We did news, too.
Oh, yeah. So now how did that
go?
Which
was just ripping. Yeah. Well, it was just rip and read. I guess we had, I'm not certain how we had got our news, but we must have had some kind of teletype or, mm-hmm. you know, feed coming in. And mm-hmm. I guess we would just, as they say, rip and read from the news coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very loose, very mm-hmm. loose. And one other thing I wanted to note, I don't know, again, I don't know if they continue to do this, but they gave the guy, this guy, Jim Jokel, who was our engineer, he was in engineering with me. They gave him free room and board mm-hmm. or free room anyway. And he lived in the basement, like right across the hall from the station. And it was kind of a mixed blessing because anytime anybody needed anything, he was right there. He couldn't say, I'm not doing that. Or, you know, I'm getting up at whatever time, you know,
right.
in the morning to help with a transmitter or something. But I always thought that was kind of comical.
Yeah. What were the other, like, big events that happened during your time there that really pushed TJU forward?
We were not really in the forefront. Our biggest listenership, we had during the exams, a classical marathon, classical music marathon.
Yeah.
And do we still do that?
We do, yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
All right, well, that was started by John Clem.
All right.
I don't know if you've talked to him, but I think he started that, K-L-E-M-M.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he would program the whole thing. So it was very strict on what you were to play. You couldn't go in the way I was telling you I would do it, just like willy-nilly pick out an album and throw it on. He had that whole thing planned out, every piece,
mm-hmm.
for as long as it went on. I don't know, at least, you know, days and days.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would have to work, people who never had shifts, you know, you'd have to go in there and work because we were on 24 hours then. And we got huge, huge listeners, big audience. And I have to say that was probably our biggest event. I can't really think of other things that we did. Like I say, it was pretty low-key station.
Mm-hmm. When you were on air then, did you ever have any sort of moment of panic or, like, any story about that?
Well, mostly it was just getting there. I didn't have a car.
Oh,
and
no.
I lived down on U Circle off Rigby Road.
Uh-huh.
And not that that was that far away. We were in the basement of, I don't remember.
Was it Humphreys?
Jack Jewett or something.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't really remember. And walking there in the dark was really scary for
yeah.
me. I had a little super sound. Do you know what those are?
What are
I'm
they?
Sure they don't have even what. Do you know what a super sound is?
I haven't heard of it. What is it?
All right. It's basically like a little tube of Freon, and it would let off this huge noise. It was a rape horn.
Wow.
So you were being attacked, and they would, I guess they sold these to women. And you'd have to walk with it, with your finger on it, because obviously if you're being attacked, you know, excuse me, let me get my super sound.
Right.
That's stupid.
Oh, wow.
But there had been some attacks and rapes at the university. And so that, to me, was the scariest part, was just getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having to walk in the dark and getting there in the dark and turning everything on and getting it going and staying awake. Because I've been out partying and stuff, so
yeah.
to wake up at 5 o'clock and drag my sorry butt up there in the winter at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was that was probably the hardest part. I did one time, either I was talking on the phone or something, and I did let an entire album play, like the whole entire side of an album. That's how lazy I was sometimes.
Oh, no.
I was so tired in the morning. You know, to keep myself awake, I just like, just put on this Joni Mitchell thing, let every song run.
Oh, man.
But occasionally I would get people who actually called and requested stuff, because I would play anything.
Wow. Did you ever have a moment when you were at WTJU that was just quintessentially TJU, or just embodied the whole spirit of what it meant?
Well, like I say, they were all really laid-back folks. And one of the things I implemented, which I was pretty unpopular, the treasure's always unpopular because
right.
says no and yes, right? And so I implemented dues. We had never charged dues. And that way I could prove to the student council that we were trying to be self-supporting. And I think there was a big debate over how much to make it, and I think it was like $10 a year.
Wow.
And there was a lot of kickback about that from the guys, because these were all really laid back, like smoke pot during your session, you know. They were not establishment type people. They could have cared less what the student council felt about them. So they weren't really interested in playing by rules and being within the establishment. So that was kind of quintessential TJU, because these are the guys that I was working with. And I was not that kind of a person. So
mm-hmm.
I was really looked at, I think, as the, you know, the nerd in the group.
So now, where else was the revenue flow coming from at that point, besides like records and dues?
That's it, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of any other people who gave us. I don't know, unless we got equipment from somebody, but I don't think so. I remember purchasing stuff. Yeah, I don't think we did have any other.
Because I know when I talked to Marcia Doran, she mentioned panhandling down on the corner to buy a new airboard, but I didn't know.
I don't remember doing that. It's possible, but I don't remember panhandling. I don't think I would have thought of that. Just blatantly asking people in their cars for money. I certainly didn't happen on my watch.
All right.
So that was in the 80s or
uh-huh.
earlier?
I think it was a little bit after the late 70s, but starting around then.
Okay. Yeah, maybe after I left, maybe they resorted to that.
And just couldn't handle
That's
it
funny.
Without
Was that Marcia who?
Yeah, Marcia Doran. Her DJ name was Spot.
Doran. No, I don't recognize that name.
Yeah, so it must have been a little
Karen, early. Karen Sachs.
Uh-huh.
Karen Sachs worked there. And John Clem and Sleeper. These are the names that I remember.
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything else that I missed that you'd like to mention about the station or your time or yourself?
No, it was a great experience. I loved broadcasting, and I continued to work, and I'm still working in it. So I really liked it, and I loved radio.
Mm-hmm.
The television people seemed kind of uppity, and that's where Katie Couric was working at the time.
Okay.
So had I pushed my way into television, maybe I would have, done better in my career because I would have been friends with Katie. But yeah, because she was in our class.
Wow.
But yeah, I really liked the radio. I liked that it was close to me first year, and it was very accessible. They were all really great people. Very eclectic group of guys.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Joan. This has been an awesome conversation.
Oh, you're welcome, Audrey. I hope my memory has served me well. I've given you good information.
Yeah, for sure. It's exactly what we need. So I appreciate it.
Oh, good.